college basketball Saturdays are officially a thing, folks. We apologize for missing last week before our first true College Hoop Saturday, but we come to you here on December the 11th ahead of what is probably the best day of the year in college basketball, December 16th. Going to be a loaded slate. I will be at Purdue versus Arizona, the CBS Sports Classic. There's tons going on. It is a great time for college basketball on the calendar, but it is a quiet week with finals week and whatnot. So it's a good time for us to step back, take stock of everything we've seen. I've been on the road a bunch. We haven't been able to record, but we are back. So if you've been looking for your fix of the two of us, it is coming in all its glory. And Brad, I guess I have to start you with this. Did you fire up BovadaSportsbook.com this past weekend and place a wager on DePaul versus Louisville? If you did, what was the wager and how'd it go?
No, I didn't touch that game. I mean, you were off gallivanting the Midwest, but there were a few like really obvious ones that I got. I write them down on a spreadsheet and then I delete them from my phone, so I don't have it top of mind. There was one that was Auburn, Indiana.
Yes.
It was what, like 6.5 or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Indiana's whole advantage is they're very big and very talented front court, and Auburn is like one of the biggest and most physical teams in the country. Like, that's not going to give there. Not like Florida Gulf and Army.
Did you at least watch DePaul Louisville?
No, because the Butler-Cal game was a thriller in double overtime. It was actually a very good game. I watched like the last maybe eight minutes of regulation, then both overtimes. And then by the time we got to Louisville-DePaul, DePaul was like in a commanding lead. So I was on, you know, it was a great Saturday for our college.
Really good. It was very much wall to wall. Yeah.
I was pretty much wall to wall. They watched a little Wisconsin, Arizona in that window. Watched a little Auburn, Indiana. I watched maybe the last two or three minutes of the first half of the game of the century. That's it.
Well, the Auburn, Indiana game was funny because I was also with you. I was like, all right, like if I was looking for a lock when I woke up and I fired up Bovada that morning, like that was the game. Was Auburn. And then I looked at the scores, 22-10 Indiana. I was like, what the hell? Like, you know, serves me right. And then I look at halftime and it's 52-34. I'm like, what happened here? Auburn in full control. But it was funny. That game was the sickos game of the year, as I've been referring to it, DePaul Louisville. Certainly the highlight of the slate. Kenny Payne could not outcoach Tony Stubblefield. I will say, just like on the most simplified level, I think the best way of describing it is like both guys are having to coach their teams at such a low level. And part of that is who they recruited and whatever. But like Tony Stubblefield was coaching like a JV coach in – I was sitting right next to that bench. I mean, it's not an insult to Tony. Like he was literally – like they were down the – like his team would be down the floor and he would be pointing at every single spot that the players need to be. He was telling them like when they had to stand up and cheer, like every single thing you could possibly imagine him having to do, he was doing. So when you have to do all of that, you can't even begin to get to the other stuff. So is DePaul like untalented? Yes, but like there's no chance for a coach to fix any of the problems because they're not doing anything like at a high level right now. Everything is done at such a at such a menial level because half their team like clearly has no idea what they're doing, like seemingly never been on like a semi-organized basketball team, and it's just falling apart. And so for that team to beat Louisville was very funny. Really the implications of that were moving a coach closer to the hot seat. I think the general consensus is that both guys will be gone by the end of the season, but in terms of a midseason firing, I think Stubblefield bought himself a little bit of time. Kenny Payne, increased the heat on his seat for a potential midseason firing because it is just obvious that they have not improved enough from where they were a season ago. Now, however, Brad, before we get into the rest of the Saturday slate, we should talk about, in the spirit of hot seat, We should talk about Michigan, which has become randomly overnight like a huge issue point scandal spot. It has cooled down since the initial rush on Sunday night when everyone went from everything is fine at Michigan to Juwan Howard is getting fired in like the next 24 hours to there's something that went on. We're not really sure what, and we'll see exactly like what it means. But the short version of the story is that there was an altercation between Juwan Howard and longtime trainer John Sanderson. John Sanderson has been with the Michigan program since the Beeline years, is very, very well respected around there. In fact, has a son who's a very good basketball player himself. And supposedly they were in some sort of altercation. Exactly what that was rooted in. There's been a lot of rumors about, you know, Jace's treatment, whatever. I can't speculate to that myself. All I know is that there was some sort of altercation between the two. Whether it was, you know, punches thrown the way that was initially reported by like the rumor mongers, that doesn't seem like it's the case, but clearly there was some sort of incident. It is in a university review process. The primary sticking point here is that Juwan was on a zero tolerance policy after the incident at Wisconsin a couple years ago when he slapped Greg Gard. So, or slapped Kravinoff, whoever he slapped. Feels weird that was that long ago. Anyway, it is a somewhat messy situation for a team that had already been in kind of a weird shamble where Juwan is coaching but not head coaching, and Martelli's still coaching, but Juwan will be back soon, and he got ejected while he was not coaching. You've got like everything about this is just strange. And in the meantime, Michigan's playing pretty bad basketball outside of beating Iowa, who seems similarly weak at this point. So I guess your 30,000 foot view, Brad, on the situation, now that I've given the brief overview, and what you expect might come of it from here.
Yeah, because I think Ant Wright had the first tweet I saw insinuating that there was an issue with Juwan Howard. At the time, Michigan's up like 20 points on Iowa. Like, what the hell's going on? See, the whole middle of the Big Ten is just such a mess that, you know, it's not over for really any Big Ten team.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Penn State. Everyone else, like Michigan State, I was kind of in a preparation doing like a redo of like conference rankings since the preseason. I mean, you got to put Michigan State or Michigan at like number six. So even with some kind of wackiness and some poor play, I don't think that the Big Ten is going to get only five bids. You know, there's opportunity for someone. What, you know, whether it be, you know, Michigan State doesn't have the bad losses. Michigan has shown aesthetically to be amazing at times. Even like Indiana survived their non-conference scares, you know, against Army and Wright State and everybody, to the point where there's nothing bad on their resume if they could figure it out and start looking better. But that's just to say that I was surprised at the Michigan thing, because one, that they were playing well. The Big Ten is wide open for a team with a disappointing non-con to step in there. And, you know, Juwan wasn't even coaching. So but he's not the coach. Are they going to blame him for the poor start? I don't know.
So I guess my view of the whole situation is this. I think everyone around Michigan, not everyone, but like a consensus around Michigan basketball is that like things are not necessarily moving in the right direction. This is theoretically Jace Howard's last year at Michigan. He is a senior in school. I guess he would theoretically have a COVID year if he wanted it. And there's no reason you wouldn't take it if you were, you know, the coach's son. But this will be his fourth year at Michigan. He could graduate. And why is Juwan Howard doing this still is basically the question I think that will get asked a lot. And I don't really know the answer to that question, right? Like, it doesn't feel like a super long-term tenable situation, especially if they were to miss the NCAA tournament again. As you said, there's a path for that not to happen. But they have really struggled, especially defensively here lately. I mean, to lose at home to Indiana was a major setback. The Long Beach State loss was bad. The St. John's win no longer looks all that good.
They looked incredible in that game, though.
Oh, my God.
Damari Burnett may have had more points in that game than he's had the whole season.
Yeah. Aesthetically, it was very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you said, the path there, they have Florida on a neutral next week. That's a very important game, honestly, for both teams. Like, Florida needs that game. Michigan needs that game. You get that one heading into conference, you feel okay. But honestly, like, there's a world where they lose that game, and there's a very real world where they lose to McNeese after Christmas. And if that happens again, I don't know if it's a firing. I don't know what it is. I don't know how this whole thing shakes out. My current opinion is that Juwan Howard will not be fired over this altercation with John Sanderson like midseason. Whether it's another step towards his demise, that I could see. But I don't think this is going to be an immediate thing. That being said, if by the time this podcast is up, Juwan's been fired, I didn't say what I just said. Just ignore me. So.
And it's interesting because I saw one of the anonymous coaching accounts hinted at Nate Oates because he's from the area or coached high school in the area when he coached E.C. Matthews, former yes. URI great at Romulus High School. There seems to be a decent amount of trouble in paradise going on where we got Kansas State, where supposedly Jerome Tang is very upset. First, there was that he didn't get Patrick Ngangba, despite doing, you know, an insane amount of following him around and using resources on him. I saw Trilly probably had it in one of his mailbags. I was like, if Tang leaves, this could have been the tipping point. That was in the preseason. And now with the whole Naquan Tomlin, they won't let him play for Kansas State, according to the university president. Seems like maybe he could look to move. I also saw one of the coaching accounts, and I think Trilly as well, hinted that Mick Cronin wasn't too thrilled at UCLA, and he had a press conference where he ragged on Villanova's athleticism as to why they couldn't rebound. But it's funny, they were saying that UCLA has an NIL issues. How'd they get Bearkay and Adame Marah then? But who knows? That Michigan job could be a domino. Maybe the UCLA job could even be a domino as well if Mick were to go to Louisville.
So things are very complicated. Let me just clear the air. I think Mick is the most logical candidate for Louisville. That being said, Mick Cronin's buyout to leave UCLA through March 31st of 2024. So this year, if he took the job before April 1st, so before the Final Four, is $20 million.
Oh.
That is totally untenable. Like, that is not – like, no one is paying $20 million basketball buyouts. Like, to get rid of a coach, let alone to hire a new one. Yes, Mick has a reciprocal buyout. So his buyout is the same for him to leave as him to get fired. So that was $24 million at this point last year, $20 million this time this year, $16 10, 6, and 2 throughout the remaining portion of his contract down through 2028. If Mick's buyout is $20 million, Mick can't go anywhere. And I actually reviewed his contract. It's a PDF, it's publicly available. There is nothing in there that says that his buyout can be waived or changed in conference realignment changes. That is something that has been in some people's contracts. It is not in his case. I don't see a world where Mick is able to leave, even if Mick wants Louisville.
But let's say that I guess that if like UCLA's season goes poorly, they don't make the tournament. I mean, he's done so well that there's no way that UCLA would just be like, okay.
I don't see why Martin Jarman would do that now.
Right.
So then there's Nate Oates, another guy, perfect fit at Michigan, theoretically, right? Ignoring the Brandon Miller stuff and like whether that would have an impact. Naoto's buyout is something like $12 million. It's publicized to be in the eight figures this year. Again, probably not tenable. So it's great to talk about, but in reality...
You're putting a damper on search season.
I know, I'm ruining it for everyone. Now we get to Jerome Tang.
So that means Jerome Tang can waltz into Louisville?
So Jerome Tang's buyout is... Drumroll, please. $6 million. Still not cheap, to be clear. From what I've been told, sources around college sports, $6 million is not like a chump change. But that at least would be tenable at Louisville. Might be tenable at Michigan. I don't think Jerome Tang's going to Michigan. But
Which sitting successful high major coach is going to have a smaller buyout than $6 million? That's basically just 2 years on your contract.
I would say a decent enough amount because most coaches don't have reciprocal buyouts. So like Nate has a very high buyout for a sitting head coach. So does Mick. Dennis Gates has a super high one. Dennis Gates is like 25, which is insane.
So no one can. So if he leaves to say go to Louisville, Louisville has to pay Missouri $25 million?
Correct. Yeah, like most coaches don't want a buyout. Like that is a school-friendly term that the coach has to be paid to leave the same amount as he has to stay or to get fired. Excuse me. That is very school-friendly. But it's also something you're willing to do if you're at a destination job. Right, Nate Oates loves Alabama. He can get more money by taking a reciprocal buyout or close to a reciprocal buyout, so he does it. Same thing with Mick. I apologize for putting the huge damper on search season, but I just don't see a real world where that move happens. Now, I could see Tang to Louisville. I could see Sean Miller to Michigan. I could see Dusty to Michigan. I could see, there's plenty of movement to be had. I wanted to pour some water on the whole, like, yeah, Nate Oates is just going to, like, waltz his way to Michigan because that buyout is, like, a big deal.
Speaking of...
Should we talk Naquan Tomlin real quick? Sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So first, Jordan Brown bails. Former McDonald's All-American like seven years ago.
He didn't bail. He's just sick still.
Okay. We'll see.
Such a bizarre situation. It's so Memphis.
Because he was so hyped up. And on Gary Parrish podcast, he was saying that the coaching staff told him in the offseason that Brown was going to be like their best player, which I wouldn't have even said that. But if the coaching staff was saying that, they were saying that. He has not been their best player. He was like reduced to like 15 minutes a game. Now he's out. My guy Malcolm Dandridge will be starting, unless they get Mr. Tomlin.
So right, so there's Naquan. Naquan is, as you said before, booted from Kansas State. The situation is bad enough. Let's put it this way. I'm not going to do the whole like internet rumor mill on like what like Tomlin did or didn't do, other than to say that the characterization that like Naquan got in a bar fight is underselling the situation. The idea that Naquan Tomlin like had a couple of beers and like punched another dude and like kept it rolling, that is not why he is no longer allowed to play basketball at Kansas State. Like there
it seems like that wasn't in the police report, because I saw Kansas State beat writers being like, oh, we reviewed XYZ. And
I feel very confident in my sourcing that there's more to the story than what is public.
Oh.
So I don't think it will be easy for everyone to take it. That being said, if you were thinking of a school, like, yeah, like, they could probably make it work. Memphis is probably right very high on the list, and Memphis could use him. He's very good. I mean, we've talked about Naquan Tomlin, very good defender, versatile forward, great player. He would help quite a bit. He'd also help West Virginia quite a bit. And I've been predicting West Virginia for this as soon as it popped, just because it's so West Virginia. like the only way to conclude this off this year of roster nonsense for West Virginia is for Naquan Tomlin to surface there.
They need some guards. They just got to cook back. Slezinski's playing well. Edwards is a beast. Get him some guards.
Naquan can play the two. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, play the three, yeah.
It's ridiculous. But, yeah, like, so it sounds like he took a visit to Memphis. This is going to have to happen quick because he's got to get enrolled. It feels somewhat unprecedented, though, right? Like, we've had some of these mid-year enrollee high school players, right? I think of Anthony McLemore as – or was it him or was it the big kid?
What
was
no, Austin Wiley.
Yes, Austin Wiley.
Jarnell Stokes is the one that I think of first. But Santiago Vescovi was one way back. Happens every so often.
So, yeah, there has been a track record of high school players. It has not really happened with college or with a transfer. But he by every like measure, I think he should be able to play. He hasn't played this year. He'll have graduated. Like, why wouldn't he be eligible?
Yeah.
So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. The list is I will say, just don't take a lot of stock in like the long list of like who's reached out. Like, I don't really see a world where like Naquan Tomlin goes to Kansas.
What about McNeese State and their new reinstated coach, Will Wade?
That would be great.
Troy said that they have the highest NIL offer out to him right now.
Where is this money coming from?
Yep. I was discussing that today with our Syracuse correspondent, Patrick Wong. I was saying oil. You know, they're down there in like southern Texas by like the Louisiana border, right?
They're in Louisiana.
Where they drill oil, right?
They're in Louisiana, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was in Texas or something.
It's in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
But maybe it's over there by the Gulf, and you know they drill and all that stuff. So.
I will say if somehow Naquan Tomlin went to Kansas, they like literally might burn down the president's office at Kansas State. It would be like scenes.
They don't need him in Kansas. Kansas needs someone who's going to hit a shot.
Although, yeah, he would just be like KJ Adams too.
I was watching a very large chunk of that Missouri game, and I did witness Nick Timberlake hit a shot.
It has happened. The impossible.
But it is so funny watching people on Twitter come to the realization that Juwan Harris is Juwan Harris. Like, you know what? I don't think he looks to score very much. Like, oh my God. Next you're going to say, I don't know if KJ Adams is best at the four. I think he doesn't shoot it very well.
All right, let's get into some games that we saw, notes that we have. You've got a bunch to get through, so why don't I give you the floor a little bit to just kind of bounce things off of me. We'll get through a bunch of stuff, and then whatever we've missed, we'll wrap up at the end, and we'll also get to previewing some of this stuff for the 16th.
All right. Maybe the most jarring game I watched was Villanova-UCLA. They awful both looked basketball. Horrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what Kyle Neptune did to our Providence white whale, Tyler Burton. He looks horrible. TJ Bamba looks horrible. Bamba was someone who shot the lights out his whole career. Was like, I bet if he went into the NBA draft, he would have gotten a two-way last year. Every game I've watched, he's been brutal. He can't shoot anymore. He looks slower and bigger. Lance Ware like lost the backup center job mid-game to Nana Njoku. They ended up hitting a few shots, but I don't know what to make of Villanova, man.
I will say I find it funny. Okay. I will say I find it funny. I just opened the box score, and you were like, "Yeah, like Tyler Burton was terrible." And I look up at Tyler Burton at 18 points on 12 shots and 5 rebounds. But I do agree aesthetically. I watched the game. He wasn't that good.
I have watched a ton of Villanova. I have not seen Bamba or Burton play well at all. You know, the whole season so far, and Lance Ware as well, obviously. But I think Villanova's resume isn't quite as bad as people think, because Joes and Drexel, I bet, are 50 spots higher than the average person would think. Like, Drexel's almost top 100, and Joe's is like might win the A-10 at this point. Yes. So it's still weird, and it's not great, but I still think that they're going to make the tournament, which opens up a bigger conundrum, because then you have to keep Kyle Neptune.
I mean, I don't think you can fire him off year two if they make the tournament.
I know, that's
I'm not sure they can fire him year two if they miss the tournament. They probably should, but...
And then for UCLA, I mean, I don't see what the Adai Mara hype was at all.
He looks terrible.
I get that he's huge and we're into, you know, huge dudes playing drop coverage. But, like, he isn't even as close to as good as, like, Klingon or... Or any of these huge guys. Like, I saw reputable people putting him as a lottery pick in the preseason. I mean, he doesn't shoot, he's not mobile, and he's super skinny.
Right, he's 7'3" and can kind of and pass. Like, that's his deal. Like, I actually made the comparison. What about Krivas at Arizona? Like, I think Krivas looked way better.
Yeah, I thought Mara was supposed to be more of like a total scoring big. Like, he'd shoot jumpers and he'd post up. But I don't see it. Now, he's someone who I bet if he sticks around in college when he's like a junior or something, he'll be an absolute monster. But right now he looks ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know if it's I hesitate to blame like the talent evaluators, because I think there's something there. And I just think, you know, the situation's not great, right? They have not great guard play. The spacing's not very good. He had, like, limited practice time. He took a while to get cleared, like, all of that. But, like, he looks very bad. Bearkay is, like, in and out. Vidae, like, doesn't play at all.
He got in a little bit. So I missed a jumper, but...
Like, we were sold, like, oh, here's all these lottery picks. And the reality is it's, like, tons of Will McClendon minutes... Tons of Lazar Stefanovic minutes.
Especially Mac. Yeah.
Right, Mac doing whatever Mac can do, but like he can't really shoot. It's just like a weird team. And they're one of these teams. They're actually kind of like Indiana, where nothing they've done has actually like hurt them yet. They've won all the games theoretically they were supposed to win. They've lost all the games they're theoretically supposed to lose. But like they're probably gonna have to do something eventually, especially given that like they're not gonna have like plentiful opportunities in league play, right? I mean,
Stanford, the league's better, but yeah, you know, we have a big litmus test game on Saturday. They're playing Ohio State on a neutral. Even despite Ohio State blowing the Penn State game, I think I'd probably give them the edge. And I like for the record, I still think this UCLA team can figure it out. But they're not going to be the top 25 team I thought they'd be.
Yeah, I think we. I mean, I have a bunch of futures out there for conference title stuff. Part of my kind of preseason betting, and one of the ones I loved at Bovada was like UCLA plus 650 or so to win the league. And they have been just so bad. Like, it's just I don't see how they have a chance of beating Arizona.
And another team that is sneaky, maybe even in worse position, is USC. I didn't watch the Bronny game. It seems like you did, right?
I did, yes.
Any thoughts on USC, who is presumably healthy for this game, right?
They were healthy. It was funny. Like, I didn't actually think USC played that horribly. They just didn't. I mean, they were kind of lackadaisical. Like, they just couldn't contain dribble penetration. I think the biggest problem that they have is that they just have no power forward. Like, DJ Rodman is like a 3-4. He doesn't look special out there. They're playing Hornery 26 minutes a game. I actually think the lineup that they played going into overtime, which was Boogie, Bronny, Collier, Kobe and Iwachukwu, is their best chance. But like, it's like Collier doesn't really make people better, which is like the primary issue right now. Is it's just a lot of like me then you basketball. I don't really see like the number one pick stuff with Collier. Like he's just like a bully combo guard.
I think that's more of if not Collier than who.
Oh, 100%.
And people are scared off by the G League guys because the G League Ignite has been just a train wreck this year.
Historically bad, yeah.
Because they have too many prospects. They have 8 dudes they got to play.
Yes.
So they're not playing veterans. And the G League is stronger than it's been because salaries have gone up. They're just getting worked.
Yes. But yeah, like, the problem is that other than Kobe Johnson, they don't really have other guys who really try to make people better. Bronny actually does. Like, I thought Bronny played a good game. Bronny played a nice floor game. He made a shot. He was active defensively. Like, that will help them. They need someone who can guard the ball, and they need someone who can make threes. He does both. But they are not what people anticipated they would be. Vince makes a lot of, like, holy shit plays, but he's also not that good yet. Josh Morgan has taken a step back. Their depth is not very good. It's just, like, again, like, haven't done a lot to hurt themselves before Sunday. But, like, woof. I mean, that was just not a good performance. They better hope that this neutral K-State and neutral Seton Hall age well.
Seton Hall is not going to age well.
Yeah, Seton Hall is what Seton Hall was last year, basically.
They might be a little worse, which I'm not even sure really how.
I guess
Dawes can't hit shots, and Wusu got worse from St. John's.
They've also replaced Tyree Samuel with, like, Jaden Bediako.
Bediako's been pretty good. It was when Hutchins Everett was hurt, they really had no one to go to when Bediako sat down at his hemorrhage points. But now they're
Bediako's back. Not as good as Tyree Samuel.
No. Speaking of the Pac-12, I mean, just the utter Colorado disrespect. I mean, I was not super into Colorado. Like, I had them in the preseason, in like, whatever, 34th, 35th, whatever it was. But they were a preseason top 25 team, right? And they they blasted Miami. And people are like, we're really penalizing you for losing a ranked Colorado State on the road. And then Florida State's not very good, but still.
Yeah, I've only watched one Colorado game this year, like in full. And that was the Florida State game. And they looked terrible in that game. But, like, KJ Simpson didn't make a shot. Da Silva was in foul trouble and didn't make a shot. It was just, like, ugly. It was weird. And they've been really good outside of that, like, offensively especially. They are very, very dynamic. They are very good on the glass. Like, if you're a very good if you have multiple shot creators, you dominate the glass, and you're a solid defensive team, like, at the rim, you're going to be pretty darn good. And that's what they are. Like, Lampkin is a good rim defender. Da Silva can really shoot. KJ can really score. And Cody Williams has been better than anticipated. I mean, Cody Williams has been efficient. Like, Cody Williams is averaging like 15 a game as a 6'8 freshman wing, and people are like questioning his NBA potential. It's insane. Like, he played an awesome game against Colorado State, I thought.
Yeah, so, I mean, kind of speaks to some bad branding that they couldn't get into the top 25 even after blasting Miami. Shouts to Ken Pom. He was all over the Miami thing.
Yes.
He put himself out there. And
he had that tweet after the Kentucky game, too. Yeah. He's like,
well, no, that was the one where he was like, why don't we reevaluate Miami instead of giving credit to Kentucky?
Right, and then Kentucky lost to UNCW, and Miami's looked awful since.
And Miami got the 27-point neutral court loss. Sticking in the Pac-12, because I think you'd say probably right now, top three teams in the Pac-12, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah,
Probably, yeah.
Utah seems fine. Carlson's obviously a monster. I was more interested. So they beat BYU. It feels like BYU is more fake than real.
Well, I guess what our way of defining is real. Like, is real
as in top 10 team, like their metrics suggest?
Yes.
Initially, I think BYU is going to be like an 8 or 9 seed in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. like initially I think I was like, oh yeah, this isn't real that they're a tournament team. And then I was like, oh, like it's really a tournament team, but it's not really the top 10 team. And then for a second I was like, oh, maybe they are a top 10 team. And no, they're not. Like eventually the shooting's going to regress. Like they shot 7 for 30 from three. And they faced a team that had enough size to like counteract them a little bit on the boards. They're a good team. They're very connected. Khalifa's ability to pass really gives them an interesting look. But yeah, like we have to slow down. I mean, they're going to be a very profitable team, I think, to bet against on Bovada. Like the sports books will catch up a little bit, but like they're going to be overvalued because of what they've done early. That's just the reality of it. But Utah looks okay. I mean, as you said, Carlson's really good. I mean, they have the shooting. It's just a question: do they have enough like firepower?
I know that they're still waiting on a waiver from Davion Smith, right?
Yes. Who I'm really not convinced is like the fix-all to anything. But
no, but when your backcourt right is Raleigh Worcester, Gabe Madsen, and Hunter Erickson, you need some athleticism in there. You need some pop.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe they've been starting Lovering and Carlson together.
Together.
Twin Dallas.
And then
go ahead, sorry.
I think we'd be remiss not to mention Washington. I did skip the Gonzaga game. I figured Gonzaga would win. I could watch some television instead. But they pulled it off. You happen to see this game?
I did. I watched almost all of it. It was an interesting game. Like Gonzaga just missed a lot of open ones in the second half where like the momentum kind of swung and all of a sudden it was like, oh, like here's wide open three, Dusty Stromer, make it. And he'd miss it. And then you're like, oh, like, you know, here we go. Wide open three, you know, Anton Watson, miss it. Like you just, they never had like the run stopper. But I thought Sevier Wheeler like really put pressure on the rim, like just his speed. Like they just they haven't had that like guard that just like impacts the game and really forces you to play their way. He's really good at that. And I also think that Corin Johnson has been really helpful to them. It's also been interesting like their rotation with the bigs. Like at the start of the year they were starting Bryden Bach. Now he's like kind of out of the rotation. Braxton Mio was the guy that we all thought was like, oh, here's all this excitement. This guy's huge. Maybe he's interesting. He's sort of on the outs. Like the big of the day now is Frank Kepnong, who we've always been fans of. We've always loved Kepnong.
Yeah.
But he was excellent. Yeah.
He's super athletic. He's huge.
He's like clinically insane, it seems like, on the floor. But yeah, that's a great win for them. Gives them an opportunity, right? I mean, their losses aren't bad. Nevada, San Diego State, Colorado State. They've got a pretty manageable final two games of the non-con, Seattle and Eastern Washington. You win those two, and like here we are, right? Like now you got an opportunity to go 500 or so in the league and be in the NCAA tournament. Go 11-9, should have a decent chance. So the Gonzaga win huge for them. I also did want to just shout out Washington State. The schedule is not great, but it appears that Kyle Smith is doing it again. Here they are.
Once they leave Eastern Washington, they turn to shit. You said DJ Riven's not looking so hot. I'm saying TJ Bamba doesn't look so hot. But Miles Rice was out all last year, right, with cancer. Now he's starting point guard.
For a program like Washington State that doesn't have a lot of NIL, that doesn't have a lot of support, to lose Muhammad Gay, TJ Bamba, Justin Powell, and DJ Rodman, arguably your four best players, and turn around and just be competitive. I mean, someone is going to get some, like, I'm convinced that someone's going to hire Kyle Smith and it's going to work out. I don't know if he'll ever, like, make the postseason for that to happen, but like I'm convinced. Even like Yesufu hasn't been that great. He's been out the last three games. He's only been double figures once. But as you said, Miles Rice, a third year freshman, who when I wrote that big feature story about Washington State and Kyle Smith a couple years ago that is often cited on this podcast, he told like Kyle Smith said, this guy is like Jamari Bouye 2.0. Like we loved him in recruiting. We thought like we had to have him even if he was, you know, not recruited by anybody else. He's been like incredible. Isaac Jones, who is like that analytic darling in the portal that was always at the top of like the Torvik rankings. He's shooting 70% from the field and averaging like 15 points a game. They've got Ruben Chinelew from Nigeria, who's been like an activity big up front as well. The Jalen Wells kid has broken through the last couple games and has been in double figures, the D2 transfer. Winsu, the French kid, is like a good connector. Like, they've got a team, man. Like, they're okay. How about this? They're starting a guy named Oscar Kloof, who I think is a JUCO.
Yeah.
He was not even on my depth charts.
He was like a top 10 JUCO guy, I thought.
I didn't even know he existed.
I think he's a stretch five.
Yeah, good for him.
But
they got two coming up here, Santa Clara and Boise. Split them even, and I think you feel okay. About the non-con, you're going to have to do something in conference because they haven't done anything in the non-league. But
that's how the portal works sometimes, is some of these teams just, like, back their way into a stud. Just, like, the dominoes fall the right way, and teams are prioritizing other guys, and Washington State can steal Isaac Jones, or, like, Providence getting Josh Aduro. You know, like, things just kind of... work out sometimes. I was getting crushed when Cooley left and I said Providence should take Kyle Smith. But he's done this every year now. Like the year before when they lost Effie Abagidi, and they think they lost all their starters back then too. Noah Williams, and you know, Kyle Smith loses four starters every year and figures it out.
If nothing, well, and we've talked about this a lot, right? The thing that makes it really hard to build a like competitive program when you're starting from scratch is that you're constantly losing guys, especially in the portal era. So like, oh, it's cool that like you land, you know, a Muhammad Gay, but they're gonna go in 1 or 2 years. It's cool that you land like a, you know, they had the kid. You know, and Abagidi, he goes in 2 years. Great, you land, like, even in the portal, like, Michael Flowers or something.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys, it's just, it's hard to maintain it. So the fact, I mean, look, how good is he is, I don't know. All I know is this. I guarantee if you hire him at a job that, like, is coming off, like, the bottom, he will bring you back to respectability. Because in year one at Washington State, a terrible job, he went from 207 to 127. And then he went from there to 78. And now he's been 44, 67, and 48 this year. Even if he falls back to like that 67 range, like doing that at Washington State is really hard. No one really knows. No one knows how to like quantify that. But like, you know, I still think he would like actually be the best possible hire for DePaul. Problem is that DePaul like will not hire him. They will not hire Josh Schertz. Like, just not how DePaul is.
I mean, the Tony Stubblefield hire was ridiculous at the time.
Absurd, yeah.
Came out of nowhere. He was, like, 60 years old, and he was an assistant at, you know, one of the easiest places to recruit the country.
Yep.
That whole thing about you can't just wallow at the bottom during your rebuild, I'm kind of worried about with Georgetown. Like, I keep seeing, like, with every Cooley quote, like, Georgetown fans being like, oh, see, we're doing it the right way. St. John's is doing it the wrong way. But, like, so two of your starters are in their last year of eligibility. Your two other starters are two of the leading scorers in the Big East. Like, what if they get rid of the two-time transfer waiver? Like, won't Dontre Styles just, like, go to Kansas? Like, you know, like. How are you going to keep guys after going 3-17 this year? But we'll see. Speaking of St. John's, I think people are making a little too much about the Boston College loss.
Yeah, I think Boston College is kind of good.
Like it's not a good loss, but like St. John's is probably going to end up, their three losses are all probably going to be quadrant two. Dayton could, I guess, get to quadrant one, you'd think. And then they have the win over Utah. So they're not in a great spot, but they're certainly not dead. They look like shit. They don't play any defense. The whole bench is a complete mirage. Rick Pitino's out there being like, I don't know who did this, but our depth isn't very good. You know, like the whole national media is backtracking. Oh, it's going to take Rick time now after anointing him throughout the whole summer.
It is also funny that there was like zero. There was zero introspection on like, oh, like he kind of ran off some decent players, didn't he? And then now we're just like kind of casually looking up and be like, oh shit, like David Jones is playing like a fringe All American, and AJ Store is averaging like 13 a game at
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah, I can't speak.
Posh is starting on a Butler team that might be better than St. John's.
Right, I'm willing to like live with the Posh thing. Like the Posh thing is the Posh, but like, I mean, I don't know. There's two like athletic wings who can defend that you just discarded.
I mean, even Colby King is playing well, right, for Tulane?
Yeah. I was just about to say I was looking for Colby King stats and the sports reference page won't load on me. Here we go. Colby King is averaging 15 points a game. Gee, I wonder if he could do anything for you. He's shooting 54% from the field. It is a real mystery as to how St. John's was 7-3. Like how bad Mike Anderson did a job last year when they had Soriano, David Jones, Posh, AJ Store, Wusu, Colby King, Raphael Pinzone, who's averaging 11 at Bryant, 12 at Bryant, excuse me. And then Drisa Traor, the only culture guy left. That's the only guy who gets to stick. It's just bizarre. Meanwhile, Andre Curbelo is getting a technical foul and then going to sit in the stands while he sits out a year at Southern Miss.
He's a wacky player, dude.
I love Curbelo, man.
He got kicked off the Puerto Rican national team over the summer. Like,
he's nuts. Omar Stanley's averaging 10 points and 4 rebounds for Boise, who's like a tournament.
He's good, Omar Stanley. Yeah.
A tournament team, yeah.
Look, Mike Anderson built like a nice deep roster.
Yeah.
And then Rick Pitino blew it up and was like, wait a second, we have no athleticism anymore.
Again, it's remarkable. People complain that they build a whole roster full of mid-major players. I'm like, oh shit, like we kind of mid-major talent. Yeah, no shit.
I mean, hand up, okay? I trusted what the Twitter was saying. I'd never seen Chris Ludlam or Jordan Dingle play, and I thought they were both going to be, you know, high-impact starters based on where people were ranking them in their transfer rankings and stuff.
Jenkins is
good. Soriano's good. Aline, I think, is pretty good, but for whatever reason, he doesn't get the same run as Taylor and Dingle. But
I'm very surprised that Dingle hasn't been good.
He doesn't shoot it well enough, and he's not athletic. He can't get by people. He's just kind of like...
He also kind of needs the ball.
Yeah. But hope is not lost for St. John's. They're going to be square on the bubble, I think, this year. But you know, with the Big East, you can't lose it to DePaul and Georgetown. And then it might not be 10-10 this year like we thought. It might be 11-9. So can you get there? But Butler has the same question. Unfortunately, I think Xavier with their two bye game losses and their just general.
It's hard to imagine them like finding a way to go on a run. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're probably done. But they're kind of a dangerous spoiler. Yeah, Butler and St. John's are going to be square on the bubble, I think. And then Villanova, if they can get out of their own way, they'll be in the tournament as well. But I was looking tournament bids today. I mean, the Big East, Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC are all like 5 or 6, it looks like, right now. So
yeah, the Big Ten's cooked. We already talked about this. Where are all the bids coming from? The SEC?
SEC, I think, will get 7, and then the Big 12 could get
13.
Well, working backwards, right? West Virginia, Central Florida, Oklahoma State is the clear bottom 3.
Yes.
I think Cincinnati's the bottom 4. Texas Tech just had a key injury. Devin Cambridge is done, out for the season with an injury. I think that probably cooks them. That's 5 right there that, you know, and then Kansas State will be bubble. BYU will be bubble. Maybe a little better than bubble for both those teams. But TCU, which I love their non-conference schedule. I wouldn't want everyone to do this, but just like one team being like, you know what? Like, you say it's important to play a hard non-con. We're going to play the worst non-con we could think of.
And then they are 362, yes.
The Big 12 reciprocates by giving them Georgetown in the Big 12 challenge. Their first like real game against Clemson, they lose, and then they're in Diamond Head. But I mean, with Nevada losing by 20 points to Drake, there might not be a quality win in a Diamond Head either. So TCU, they might have to go more than 500. We'll see.
Yeah, TCU has really tricked some people by blowing everybody out into thinking that they're okay, and then they lost. Should have lost to Georgetown, and then did not look very good against Clemson. I mean, I think the biggest thing that was crazy, like, because I watched a lot of that game, like, they got out, like, rebounded, I think, by Clemson.
And they play Emmanuel Miller at the 3 and Micah Peavy at the 2.
No, their whole thing is, like, we're just tough as shit and rebound.
They got, like, nothing from their 5s. They split it 3 ways with Uday, Cork, and Mustafa. They got, like, nothing there.
Yeah, Uday has been kind of a disappointment. I guess it makes sense. I mean, so yeah, you can talk yourself into more of these teams not being tournament teams, but I think this is also the time of year. Like, someone has to win these games. And once you win all these games, when you win these games, you just wind up building a bubbly resume. So.
Right, like when TCU wins at Texas Tech or something, you know, that's the Big 12 teams are just going to feast on that.
Are you buying the whole, like, Clemson's winning the ACC thing?
I was thinking Virginia wins the ACC. I think Clemson's
are very
right there.
Clemson. People are very excited to, like, tweet about how good Brad Brunell is.
Well, this Clemson roster, I think, really has the with the whole is greater than the sum of the parts thing going for it. A lot of these guys that stuck around, like R.J. Godfrey and Shefflin and Chauncey Wiggins, look a lot better. They're really making an impact. And they got one of the best players in the country in P.J. Hall. And the backcourt with Hunter and Gerard has been really good.
Shefflin has been awesome.
So is Godfrey.
I always liked R.J. Godfrey out of high school. He was like a mid-plus. I always thought he was pretty good. But yeah, Shefflin's a great rebounder, great activity guy, can stretch it a little bit, does his job, lets Hall, like, float to the perimeter.
If this season went bad and Brunell got canned, I kind of wanted Godfrey at Providence to replace Hopkins.
Did you know that Kimmy was the final two for R.J. Godfrey?
I did not.
Yeah.
I knew he was in the final two for Jace Posey.
Yes, it was.
Redshirted at TCU.
It was them or Clemson. He got an official visit. When I went to, we've talked about the official visit planning that I was sitting in on when they were recruiting Justin Fernandez. The other guy that they talked about in that meeting was R.J. Godfrey. Somewhere you know.
And personally, I have my portal eyes on T.J. Power and Taylor Bowen, personally.
You love these 3-year down transfer former top recruits.
Well, we need the shooting, and then Power, he's from Massachusetts. Not gonna go to Boston College. I think his parents played there, but come on, Providence or Boston College. And then with Bowen, we need some athleticism in that front court, and he went to high school in Rhode Island for years.
No, he's going to go to Georgetown. He's going to be Bryce Hopkins' backup at Georgetown.
Well, see, I've been thinking a lot about this. Georgetown on the portal can really only get one starter, if you think about it, right? Because Epps and Stiles are going to be back. They're obviously starting. Your front court's going to have Sorber, Fielder, and Cook. So one of those guys is going to start. So you're looking at, like Bryce Hopkins, if they can get him right. But, like, is that going to be enough to move?
No, they did 2-4, right?
But then it'll be Brumbaugh's third year.
Right, but Brumbaugh could be the sixth man.
Yeah, and then
there's room for a rotation backcourt and, like, a starting 4.
Yeah. Is that going to be enough? move the needle, I guess we'll see. But
I mean, I don't think people are ready for the conversation that Jaden Epps is like incapable of leading a winning team.
Georgetown fans have been saying it.
They have?
Yeah. They're like, he doesn't play winning basketball.
These
Cooley should bench him.
They must be reading the Illinois message boards.
My whole For You section of Twitter is like Georgetown fans either making fun of Providence, which has now turned into me seeing Georgetown fans talk about Georgetown, and like random politics tweets that I have no idea that the genesis of. Anyway,
where were we? Oh, over under. How about this? Over under 4.5 Big East wins for Georgetown.
Under.
Okay. All right. If we could get Bovada to post that as a line, I would love to hit the over.
Really?
Yeah, I just think Cooley's too good. I think they get to 5 or 6.
But like even when he took over right. So this is the difference in building a program in the previous era. Was he inherited some like really good players?
Yes.
Where nowadays you don't inherit anybody basically, but you can remake the roster immediately. I think it was probably better the old way. Where like, oh, the best player on the bad team is too good to want to be a sit out transfer. He's just going to stick around. As opposed to cobbling, you know, 6-7 transfers together.
That's probably true.
Before we moved on, I did want to bring up the DePaul Texas A&M first half. The 2.1 points per possession allowed.
All-time stuff.
That's maybe the most how is anything going to top that this year? They would have been better off playing no defense.
Well, people were mad at me because I said that I thought that DePaul this year was worse than Louisville last year. And then DePaul this year beat Louisville, and people were like, oh my God, you're wrong. I'm like, well, Louisville last year was 200. I tweeted it earlier. Let me see if I can find it exactly. But they're basically in the same spots on KenPom this year as they were last year. Let me rephrase this. Louisville this year. Louisville last year is in the same spot in KenPom at this time as DePaul is this year. Louisville is 211 on 12-10. DePaul was 212 on 12-9.
Then Louisville got all the way down to what, like 280?
270, yeah.
Ugh. That's so funny.
It's unbelievable. But I mean, look, DePaul has room to go down. That's the thing. I mean, at some point, you stop being able to because you can't lose by any more than you're losing by. So DePaul's 204 right now. But that implies them losing. That has them as an 8-point underdog at home against Northwestern. If Northwestern doesn't beat DePaul by 20, it's a disappointment. Then they play Villanova at home. We don't think Villanova's very good. If they don't beat DePaul by 15, that's a disappointment. UConn on the road, 24. I mean, it's probably not going to be that, right? Georgetown on the road, 3-point spread. You know, we'll ignore that because we don't know how good Georgetown is. Creighton at home. Supposedly, Creighton's only going to beat them by 17 points. Creighton might beat DePaul by 35.
And that just drags down the rest of the Big East when, you know, Xavier's going to win at DePaul by 1 point or something. And then Xavier goes from 65 to 72.
It's true.
Get Kyle Smith in here ASAP.
We need somebody to stabilize the ship.
Are you kind of with me on Virginia optimism? I mean, the last time I saw them play, they got destroyed by Wisconsin. But since then, what, they beat Texas A&M, who was shorthanded.
Yeah.
Asterisk. But they got two NBA players who are elite defensive players. They seem to be shooting it better. The front court, I think, is still a concern.
Yeah.
But just the way the chips have fallen, I'm kind of in on Virginia.
So they're like really, really guarding. Like really guarding. And if you really defend and you take care of the basketball, you're probably going to be okay. I think my major concerns are, you said the front court. Specifically to me, it's the rebounding. I mean, they have gotten destroyed at times on the glass. And I don't see how it's getting better. Right? Blake Buchanan's a freshman. Clearly, the Jordan Minor experiment has not gone well. Dunn is not like an elite rebounder. Jacob Groves is very small. Like Jacob Groves is a wing last year at Oklahoma. So, you know, I just have a hard time with that side of it. And I think they're not super dynamic still. But yeah, I mean, this is the type of year you talk yourself into Virginia, right? This, every year when you start to see cracks in the armor at Duke and cracks in the armor at Carolina, you start to say, oh, you know, here comes UVA. Here comes little Tony Bennett. And last year they tied for the league crown. And Miami was the other team. I don't think Miami's that team this year. I don't think Miami's winning 15 league games. So there's room for it, right? There's room for Virginia. There's room for Clemson. I still think Duke and Carolina will really be right there. It'll be interesting to see if anyone else can really establish themselves and make a little bit of a push. The one team that thinks they can, and thinks, is Wake Forest.
Thinks as in Steve Forbes said this, or just because they got Efton Reed back?
Steve Forbes has not said this publicly, but people around Wake Forest think that like they're a Sweet 16 team with Efton Reed.
I am pulling up Wake Forest right now because I know that they beat Florida.
Correct, without Efton.
Without Efton Reed.
Now, Efton Reed was just held scoreless by NJIT, so take for that what you will. But they felt like, because Boopy Miller has been really good. Salas has been good. You've got Hildreth in the backcourt. You're about to get Monsanto back. Andrew Carr is hyper efficient. And then you now add Reed to the mix as like a legit five instead of having to play Matthew Marsh or Zach Keller. And all of a sudden, it starts to look pretty good. I don't think they can win the league. But things could get interesting.
So they're
the other,
right.
The other thing always is you got to be considering the strength of schedules for these conferences. So like so Wake Forest only gets Louisville once. It also only gets Notre Dame once. It gets Georgia Tech twice, but Georgia Tech is like a little feisty now. But it has Duke twice. It has Virginia twice. It has North Carolina just once. So I think that, as much as anything, will really impact the league race.
So their first five ACC games, home Virginia Tech, at Boston College.
This is Wake?
Yeah, home Miami, at Florida State, and home Virginia.
Right.
So those five games, they should... So the road games are 3-point dogs according to T-Rank. And then the home game versus Virginia, they're 1-point dog. But those are all opportunities that are reasonable and could move the needle with a win.
Yeah. Again, I think that the story of this league will be how many of the non-tournament teams are feisty. Right? In the last couple of years, people have not been able to avoid the losses. Right? So
Clemson Georgia losing Tech, to Louisville last year.
Right. Ignoring Louisville, right? Like obviously Clemson losing to Louisville is insane. But like Georgia Tech, not a tournament team. But maybe a little feisty. Like Nate George and Bayandongo have been really good. Are they gonna beat people? Is
already
Boston
beat Duke
College? Right. Is Boston College gonna beat people? Is Florida State gonna beat people? The numbers say yes. Reality? We'll see.
I think the ACC is just getting the five teams, the you know Duke, Carolina, Miami, Virginia, and Clemson, which all those teams could be single digit seeds, so yeah. Could be a nice showing. Pittsburgh has kind of come back to earth. I think Carlton Carrington's come back to earth a little bit.
Yeah, people realize that like he can't go left, can't go to the rim.
And then like Wake and NC State and Vatek, they're just kind of all floating in the middle there. NC State getting blown out by Ole Miss was concerning. I guess before we move on to Ole Miss, the undefeated Rebels. Last thing on the ACC, have you taken the Braden Smith over Tyrese Proctor victory lap yet, or are you waiting for?
I'm waiting. And I also never actually said that he was better. I just said that it was crazy that they were like talked about in like different tiers, different worlds.
Hey, Braden Smith was pretty awesome against Alabama.
How about this? Braden Smith's 5 KenPom comps right now. Frank Mason, RJ Davis in 22 when they made the Final Four, Kyron Cartwright, Jarvis Garrett, and Joel Berry.
A lot of Rhode Island and North Carolina.
I was going to say, like, the ties are wild here, yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, he's certainly a point guard that is scoring it at a high level.
I think the biggest thing with Braden this year versus last, because he has clearly made a step, is he has a second gear. Like, he can take over a game in the ball screen, right? He can make those middies that he made against Alabama. He can pass it. Like, the pass he made for, like, that dagger and one by Edie was unbelievable. And yes, he like he makes some like funky decisions and like gets a little too creative, but like he's super efficient. He makes shots. He can score in the mid range. So he can really pass. Like, he is one of the best point guards in the country. And it's time that people stop. Like, honestly, I think a lot of it is that he's white. And I'm not doing this as like a race thing. Like, I think there is a certain like connotations of like a white Purdue point guard, and people just think he's like Spike Albrecht or some shit. Like, Braden Smith has some shit to him.
Moving on to the Ole Miss Rebels, this is a complete house of cards. It's going to unravel very soon.
But to what? I mean, it's kind of the same thing as like BYU.
No, I think BYU is going to unravel to like a 9 seed. I think Ole Miss is going to unravel to like 12th in the SEC.
You think they're that bad? You think Chris Beard's not going to find a way to the NCAA tournament?
Okay, let's look at the SEC as a whole, though. Do you feel better about South Carolina or Ole Miss?
Ole Miss, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, they're more athletic, they're more skilled, they're tougher.
They have a
real coach.
How about Missouri?
Ole Miss.
Really? Oh.
Oh, yeah.
How about Georgia?
Ole Miss, definitely.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe I'm, like, insane. But they have some like legit wins. Memphis is a legit win. NC State is a cool win. UCF on the road, not a terrible win.
I guess we'll see if they've truly turned the corner. You know, that's why it's so important with those close calls early in the year to hold on, right? Like, your metrics take a hit, but at the end of the day, a win's a win. Like, beat Detroit Mercy by one. If you're San Diego State, beat all those California schools by 1 point. And just hold on for dear life.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, I mean, they were close to like legit disaster a few times.
I was watching them on opening night. They were struggling with Eastern Washington, or maybe that was the Friday of opening week. But so I guess you are buying a Chris Beard. How about this? Ole Miss or Arkansas?
Arkansas, I think.
So you think that the SEC gets eight teams in?
Yeah.
Could happen. No, sorry, that's 9.
Yeah, I think 9 is fine. Yeah. Tennessee's in, Bama's in, Auburn's in, Kentucky's in, A&M's in, Mississippi State's in, Florida's in, Arkansas's in, Ole Miss.
9. Yeah. Did you want to talk any Big Ten middle?
Not really, honestly. I feel like we hit a little of it early.
I guess, saw people saying that Fran has given up. I saw you give a passionate defense of Fran McCaffrey.
People are insane. They have Fran McCaffrey is like the coach that every middling program always wants. Right? He makes the tournament every year. He plays a fun style. Kids stay and get better. Like, you don't have to worry about the portal and like having to relearn the names every year. You have a great regular season, and like they actually win like on NCAA tournament game like half the years. And people can say, well, he's got to make the Sweet 16. Why is the standard in Iowa the Sweet 16? It's like the 15th. It's going to be the 13th best program in its league next year. Like, what are we talking about?
Fran's definitely a higher level than, like, the Turgeon guys. You know, like, Turgeon himself. Kevin Willard and Andy Enfield, where it's like, I guess we'll run it back. I guess this is probably better than the median outcome, but
he's a little better than those guys at a little worse a job.
Yeah.
He took Joe Wieskamp, the Murray brothers, and Luka Garza, turned them all into NBA players, lost them year by year, and kept being good. Again, whatever you think of Fran McCaffrey, you think he's a dick, whatever. How many programs in college basketball have we talked about just get destroyed by early entry? It is so
Danny Manning, Wake Forest. Yeah, there's a million of them. Yeah.
This is what happens. When you're a program like this, like Iowa, I mean, you get crushed when Keegan Murray goes a year early. And instead, they just turn around and make the tournament. And now finally this year, they might like commit the crime of going to the NIT. Meanwhile, their whole team is like freshmen and sophomores, except for Cricky. Like, everybody's going to be back. These freshmen, by the way, are like showing real promise, especially Owen Freeman. Owen Freeman looks like he's going to be like an all Big Ten player one day. And the response is like, oh, well, we lost to Iowa State, so we have to fire Fran. Do you have four brain cells?
They have a top 75 recruit coming in, too.
It's legitimately crazy. It's so nuts. I cannot comprehend it.
I guess technically Perkins and McCaffrey said that they're TBD. But where are they going?
Right. I mean, I guess they could portal.
I did see that Crowell and... Who else? Crowell and Klesma, I think, said that they're coming back already for next year. So.
I mean, it's Wisconsin. Like, yeah. Where are these guys going?
Wisconsin, I think, has the potential to run through the Big Ten. Obviously not to the level of Purdue. But just like looking at their schedule, I was like, oh, they should win that one. They should win that one.
I think Illinois is the only team better than them in the league other than Purdue.
Agreed. I think that Illinois-Tennessee game was sneaky two top 10 teams.
No, I like fully buy all of the Illinois right now. They're really good.
Like Coleman Hawkins, when I checked, he was averaging like 5 points a game. I don't know what he did.
He's playing terrible.
But Domask is really good. Terrence Shannon's obviously All-American caliber.
Yeah. And Guerrier's been brought into the role.
The Rodgers point guard thing's not working.
Working fine, I feel like.
If they're a top 10 team, then maybe it is working. But
I was going to say, they're top 10, and they don't like turn it over every possession. It's working.
I just hate when people play point guards who aren't point guards.
Agree. All right, should we preview the coming stuff real quick, or do we have more stuff we have to get through on the show?
Let's see.
I actually have one... kind of in your fashion, get off my lawn.
Go for it.
The James Madison ranked thing, we talked about this right when it happened. It's such a farce.
They're climbing up the analytics.
And now we're stuck. Now we're stuck.
Well, that's literally, that was opening night, right? Where they beat, I was bitching about it in my group chat, and they're like, why do you care so much? Like no, they're going to be ranked, and we're never getting rid of them. They're never coming out.
I mean, we're lucky that they haven't beaten anyone else of like any substance.
Because if they had done like the Colorado State climb to 13, like they'd be ranked, like they could go like 14-4 in the Sun Belt. They'd still be ranked.
Yeah.
But yeah, the league is, the Sun Belt's really like low key not very good right now. There's only one other team that's top 150, and that's App State. So they're going to rip, off some, a crazy record and have like a little bit of an at large case. But the problem is, again, Michigan State's not very good, right? Like Michigan State is fully on like the, we're going to lose 13 games again thing. And that's not going to be enough. Like I think Princeton's going to have a better at large case. Cause Princeton at least will have a few wins that are okay. Like Princeton has a roadie at Duquesne that might be useful. There's a roadie at Hofstra that might be like semi useful. They beat Furman. They beat Rutgers on a neutral. They could have used that St. Joe's game. But if they beat Delaware on the road, which could also be like a sneaky quad too, and they go like 12-2 in the Ivy, I think Princeton's gonna have a chance.
Well, so we've touched on, you know, we kind of skirted over everything I wanted to mention here. First, Michigan State, that no portal this year is looking ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous when your best player came from the portal, and then now, and the guy who everyone's waxing poetic about, who's gone from last year, Joey Hauser, also came from the portal. Yeah. And now you're drawing the line, being like, no portal. But you figure Hogard and or Akins won't be back next year, that they'll probably portal themselves.
Yeah.
And if one of them leaves, Michigan State has to get a starter in the portal.
Yeah.
To play with fears in either Hogard or Akins.
They have a 2024. They're doing okay in 24, I think, as well.
Yeah, Kurtang is like a shooter scorer wing who's like maybe 6'4".
Right.
Jace Richardson's a super athletic combo guard.
But this is also the same thing, right? Like, is he going to magically trust the freshman next year?
Exactly, because Xavier Booker's playing on his way out too.
Right, Jace Richardson can play next year, but like Jeremy Fierce can't? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, so Michigan State is going to be a fascinating one to track. I watched pretty much all their game against Nebraska yesterday. And they
just don't look talented.
They just looked even with Nebraska. Rink Math looks incredible.
He's great. The thing with Michigan State, I do actually think that Jackson Kohler is going to make like a pretty big difference. If he
can score.
Right. I mean, they literally get nothing at center, like literally nothing. And it's so hard in college basketball because everyone else is scoring at the five.
Literally, I would tell every player in Jackson Kohler's situation to just redshirt, except now it's like, dude, whenever you can come back, just come in there and post up.
If I was Michigan State's NIL people, I would pay like a lot of money to make sure he plays this year. I mean, how about this? How does Mati Sissoko have Mati Sissoko has played 26 minutes in their two Big Ten games. He has one total shot attempt.
How is he going to shoot? Like, why would you give him the ball?
Let's keep tracking back. Their previous two high major games, Arizona, Butler, 36 combined minutes across the two. Guess how many shot attempts?
Four.
Two.
He was a top 50 recruit. Last year, the first game of the year, he went off. And since then, it's just been a disaster.
He's useless. I'll share this in the spirit of
transparency.
Transparency and nobody cares on the podcast that would be listening. I had a long debate with the Sleepers guys and with Drew Valentine, head coach at Loyola, in February, because I was at a bar with the Sleepers guys and they were like, Mati has to transfer and he has to go like super low because he sucks. I was like, you don't understand. Like, if Mati Sissoko goes in the portal, he's going high major. Like, like starting centers in the Big Ten go in the portal, they stay high major. It's the, like, the proof is in the pudding. Ryan Young is at Duke, was my argument. And so we texted Drew, because the Sleepers guys know Drew, I know Drew. And we're like, all right, like, Mati Sissoko goes in the portal, like, would you take him? And he was like, ugh, like, I don't really want to, but like, I guess I would have to, because like, he's the starter in the Big Ten. And like, I really don't know. Like again, I don't know that you could take him like in the A-10 right now. I don't know that like at Loyola I could take Mati Sissoko. Like, he would go there and it'd be like a worse Bryce Golden situation where you'd be like, oh my god, like, yeah, this guy just stinks.
Yeah, Bryce Golden, for how bad he was, actually could like score every once in a while.
How about this? Again, using KenPom comps.
Here
we've got five for Mati Sissoko, and it is a murderer's row of bigs. Number one, an old Friar favorite, Khalif Young.
Whoa, that is disrespectful.
Number two, Flo Thamba.
Also disrespectful.
All right, now we get to the real good ones. Number three, Isaiah Jacy.
Okay.
Who was just like fat and couldn't do anything. Number four, Odi Oguama.
Okay.
Who's never done anything ever.
He started the four last year for Cincinnati, but go on.
Number five is Rutgers backup center legend Shaq Carter.
That is certainly disrespectful to Flo Thamba and Khalif Young.
You loved Khalif Young. That's right. how about this? Mati Sissoko this year has an assist rate of 2.2% and a turnover rate of 34.5%.
How would he ever get an assist? Like, who would give him the ball expecting him to make a play, you know?
Occasionally. And no one would ever double him because they want him to shoot it. Yeah.
I saw one of the like NBA accounts, like an NBA Twitter guy. He quote tweeted Jordan Sperber's video of like doing ball screen coverage or whatever. The college coaches are so stupid. Why don't they just ice the ball screens? And I was imagining like a team ices Michigan State, and this Maddie gets the ball at the free throw line. Like, all right, Maddie, make a play.
Because it's not that easy to ice people, I guess.
Much like the famed Theo John, Jace Johnson backcourt or front court of the Wojo tenure.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Michigan State. This year's Wofford, Florida Atlantic, Wyoming team. You think maybe Princeton has a chance? Indiana State's looking scary. They're playing Michigan State soon. A
lot of hype.
Grand Canyon.
Very good.
James Madison still hasn't lost. And then Drake knocked the crap out of Nevada. So,
and all the Mountain West teams are good. I mean, I think this mid-major crop this year is like really good, like better than I can remember in a long time.
Rutgers gets Dylan Harper officially.
Yep.
They are going to be doomed next year. The expectations are going to be ridiculous. Now, you would think Cliff Amore and Gavin Griffiths will both be back, but
I don't think Cliff will be back.
Who knows if there's enough NIL to go around?
I think Gavin will be. I don't think Cliff will be.
So then you need a center in the portal too. We'll see. But Rutgers fans, I know, will be way, way over their skis. Worse than St. John's fans this year. Shock of revenge! They blasted Texas.
Yeah, I was at that game.
David Joplin has been kind of terrible this year.
Yeah, he's not very good.
He's been worse than last year.
Everything about Marquette like has been a little bit like worse than I expected. But Kolick and Oso and Cam are so good it hasn't even mattered. Like they're just still a monster.
And if Marquette's gonna keep doing their whole retention thing, no portal thing, Stevie Mitchell and David Joplin as seniors next year should be the second and third best players on the team. So they have a long way to go. High major teams got to stop playing these mid majors on the road. Auburn losing to App State. Literally, no one cares about the game until the high major team's on the ropes, and then they just kind of make fun of them and give them vague credit for nothing. Like if Auburn won that game, no one would have cared. No one would have even realized the game wasn't even at Auburn. It's a complete waste of time, and I say that as someone. You know, as a fan of a team that does that every other year, plays at a lowly mid-major arena.
You are.
I know what it's like. And then just last but not least, your Northwestern Wildcats. You were there. They beat Purdue. They're ranked now. Do you see this coming in the preseason? An early December ranking?
I mean, I still think they're that good. Like,
I don't either.
Other than the Purdue game, I don't think they looked like a very good basketball team. Like, Boo is Boo. But in that game, Langborg and Barry really made shots. And Northwestern kind of has the recipe where they have like a massive center who's like not completely overmatched by Edie. They send all the doubles and then they just like get into Braden Smith enough where he just like turns it over and you survive.
All right. You want to preview stuff? Yeah. I assume we're starting with
let's work our way through this quick. Yeah.
All right, go for it.
So the big game is the Arizona-Purdue game, 4:30 Eastern, Indianapolis. I don't know if people have, like, totally, like, realized that this game's on Peacock and no one's going to be able to watch it.
I personally do not have Peacock. Will I get it? I mean, maybe if there's some sort of free trial or something, but UNC UK
I'll send you a Peacock login since I'll be at the game.
Yeah. UNC UK is going to be running kind of staggered with it, and that's also an excellent game. So
that game's going to be a track meet.
Yeah.
That should be really good. I mean, Arizona Purdue's going to be fun. Like, that'll be, like, the definitive number one game for a bit. If Arizona wins that game, they might be undefeated for, like, a while. Because they do have Alabama and FAU, but those are, like, pseudo-home games. And then after that, like, you get into the Pac-12 and, like, they play Cal, Stanford, then home Colorado, home Utah. Those are, like, winnable games. At Wazoo, home USC, home UCLA. Like, they have a lot of their hard ones at home on the early side of the schedule.
I mean, Colorado's the second-best team in the league right now.
Yeah.
So if you're handling them at home, you're not going to have many challenges.
But there are 11-point favorites in that game for KenPom.
Yeah.
So
T-Rank has it at 9. I mean, they're going to be, let's see, more than, so their first game that they're favored by less than 5 points is at Washington State.
That one is 9 on KenPom, so.
Yeah, 4 on T-Rank, and then at Oregon on the end of January, they're favored by 3.
Still 9 on KenPom.
Yeah.
KenPom does not have a game where they're not 5+ point favorites the rest of the way other than Purdue.
I'm pretty confident they're going to be a 1 seed. Although I did the same thing last year.
Yes.
I literally sat here at the same time last year and said, I guarantee you Arizona and Purdue are going to be 1 seeds. And I think UConn too, obviously.
Yeah. Carolina, Kentucky will be a track meet. Houston gets tested a little bit by A&M on a neutral. But I think Houston is probably just, like, better and finds a way. Baylor should have scored a million points on Michigan State. I think Kansas is probably going to handle Indiana, but that's, like, one of those games where it's, like, it's a home game for Indiana. They'll be up for it. Maybe they find a way where, like, they ride the crowd. Clemson versus Memphis and, like, the we're not respected enough bowl. I'm really tired of all the Memphis people being like, it's absurd we're not ranked. Like, you haven't beaten anybody who matters. Like, relax.
Yeah, what, they beat Arkansas, VCU, and Stanford? Is that right?
They had a bunch of, like, mid-wins. Yeah,
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan. They beat Mizzou. They beat A&M. Their only win is A&M. And they're, like, they're 54th in T-rank, like, without the preseason. And people are like, how are they not ranked? This is an abomination. Like, people are idiots. Bama at Creighton, good game. Or is that at Creighton or a neutral? Let me see. No, at Creighton. That game will be, you know, a million points.
Did you say Zags and UConn?
Oh, that's Friday night. Yep.
Yep.
Should be. That'll be interesting. I mean, that's it's one of those where, you know, Gonzaga sneaky kind of needs it, right? Like
playing in Seattle.
Right. Kind of a home game. Best real chance to get a great win. Again, it depends on, like, what your expectations are. If Gonzaga's okay with getting, like, a 5 seed, I'm like, whatever. But, like, if they want to be, like, an elite team, it's a game they got to win. But I think UConn's look great. I mean, Newton's been unbelievable. Newton's averaging 17-7-6.
The ball just goes in.
People were running him off last year.
In the preseason.
And in the regular season.
Point guard.
Like, they say
it's all his fault whenever they would lose. But, like, they're getting great mileage out of Hassan Diarra off the bench, Solomon Ball. who's starting in place of Castle. Castle's back now. Caravan's killing it. Klingon's not even clinging yet. They, I think,
Johnson.
I think they're the clear favorite in the Big East so far. But
yeah. Anything else?
Providence game was an abomination. Can't even sit your best player for 90 seconds and it all goes to shit.
Devin Carter is like everything, right?
Yeah. In that game against Oklahoma, he had 5 blocks. He blocks jump shots. He gets weak side blocks. He blocks floaters. He's just incredible. I took a trip to the URI message board before Providence URI game. Just what a wacky place is going on over there. Then they lose to Brown the next time, so I make a return trip. And they're talking about how prior to the Providence game is, oh, we're even, and Luis Courtwright's better than Devin Carter. After the Brown game, it's burn it all down. Fire Archie. They hate this freshman power forward who starts with them, David Fuchs. They're like losing their minds over this guy. URI is screwed, though. But we'll see.
Why are they screwed?
Because they had the coach that just won the national championship, and they thought that was an every year thing.
Oh, yeah. Now yeah, people spent like the entire Dan Hurley URI era being like, he can recruit, but like, can he coach? They'll be all right. And then it's like, oh no, Dan Hurley might be like the best. Like, Dan Hurley might have like a legendary run at UConn.
And I thought the Archie hire was awesome. I thought that was going to really work out, but
I think it still will.
I mean, they could come in last again this year.
I don't think they're coming in last.
We'll see how the A-10 shakes out.
I think Fordham and Slew are going to be right at the bottom.
Travis Ford's done, right?
Theoretically, although he's got a lot left on his deal. Making
these
2.4.
Pesky buyouts that are signed for no reason.
The ADs are terrible at this.
The worst one of all time is Wayne Tinkle. Like they should have fired him the minute the Elite Eight game ended. They should have, Wayne, that was fun. All right. That was a good one.
It's funny because like you say that, and obviously that's not like a feasible thing to have done. But like given the choice between doing that and like the extension that they gave him, I think that was like by far the better move.
You're coming off an Elite Eight. You would have gotten a better coach. And then now you're in conference nowhere. You know, you're like half in the Mountain West, half not. Who's going to take that job if they fire Wayne Tinkle?
Kudos to Wayne Tinkle, by the way. They're 6-0 in the bye games.
Now, barely.
Overtime against Troy. Double overtime against Cal Poly. Overtime against App State, and then against Utah Valley, they won by 3 and were like trailing in the final minute or so.
Team of destiny.
It's something else, man. But that's how it starts with Wayne. You know? Think about Oregon State. They go. So what was it? In 2017, they go 5-27. This is the year after they made the NCAA tournament. Go 5-27. Oh my God, this is an atrocity. The next year, all right, they go 16-16. They beat like no one of note, but like they win their home games. All right, the next year they go 18-13. All right, now it's time, Wayne. Like you got to do something. You're on the hot seat. All right, I'll just make the NCAA tournament. He wins the conference tournament, goes to the Elite Eight, gets himself extended. So they were shitty, and then last year they were 11-21. That's the 16-16, but you're not quite as good. And now this year they're 6-3. It's just taking a little longer this year.
Hey, I mean, might as well hold on to him at this point.
Yeah.
Another magical run is in tow. Do you have any early portal desires? Like, everyone knows Xavier Bucker is going to be out there. He played AAU with Garway.
I think it's more likely that Garway portals than Xavier Bucker and Garway are at Providence.
I know. I don't know if I'd want Xavier Bucker.
I can't believe that there are still people like saying he's a lottery pick. Garway. He's not good.
He's not explosive at all. That's the issue.
He played like one good scrimmage at the Hoop Summit, and everyone thinks he's God.
When like he gets into the paint, he like kind of glides, yeah. And then he can't finish. He doesn't explode like a Devin Carter does or something. But
no, I don't have many like my brain has not occupied itself too much yet with like the next wave of moves. It's more worried about the coaching searches, and then like, all right, which rosters are going to get torn apart? Like we've talked about this. Like I think Oklahoma State's roster is going to be like. Oklahoma State's combined roster value is going to be like $3 million.
Eric Daly and Brandon Garrison alone will be like at least $1 million, if not more.
Right, those guys are going to be huge names. Bryce Thompson could be a COVID senior. He'd be like a biggish recruit, even though he's not that good. Keon Williams is like a good glue guy. He'd be like a high major like starter. You can like peel off like the Justin McBrides and the Jamarian Kellers and the Connor Dowds who are playing minutes and like get them $50,000 each. You know, that roster is going to be like beautiful spare parts.
How about Dennis Evans?
Oh, poor Dennis. I watched Dennis warm up Saturday at the Louisville game.
He didn't play, right?
No, he just stands there with a grin on his face. He's just got a tremendous outlook on life.
Well, I mean, he was committed to Minnesota.
I just think he's a nice kid. I think Dennis. I think if you took basketball away from Dennis, Dennis would be like a 3.8 GPA kid at like I don't know, like Cal Poly.
He should go to UConn.
Dennis Evans?
Yeah.
He's not good.
He was a top 30 recruit, and he's huge.
Yeah, but that was like a nonsense top 30. Dennis Evans was a top 30 recruit because he played AAU off-circuit and played on like a public high school, and like no one ever saw him against anyone good. He's a gimmick.
Well, I mean, that would be a disaster for the recruiting analysts.
The recruiting analysts have disasters all the time.
I mean, I do want to give props to Jamie Shaw when he said that Xavier Bucker wouldn't be a top 10 impact freshman in the Big Ten. I saw like a ton of people ragging on him. It's like, he's not even like a top 30 impact freshman in the Big Ten. He just sits there.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything.
Behind Matty Sissoko.
Anyway, well, if we go any longer on this podcast, we're going to say some things we regret about Monty Sissoko. So in the interest of that, let's wrap it up. We appreciate you all listening. Should be a fun week. Enjoy it. These types of Saturdays don't come around often. And gear up for one of the best days of the year. Should be fun.